It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Ah, okay, now I have a microphone. Apparently the cat got in back here. Happens from time to time. Well, howdy. I'm a little late with that, but still, howdy. It is the 26th day of November, 2018. This is the Horn Headon.live is where you'll find us. That's the easiest way to get to the stream, although you can also find us at TuneIn on Roku devices. The podcast is on Podbean. We're also at Stitcher. We try to be as ubiquitous as we possibly can. And because we want to make this free program as easy for people to get as it can be. It's 2 minutes past the hour. I was a little late to the game, but trying to figure out just exactly what the cat had reprogrammed on the mix desk. It's fun when there's a little bit of adventure in every evening's program. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and we are running downhill toward the end of the month of November. We pulled up a little bit short, although we had a Friday on the front porch, community-made miracle. We pulled up a little bit short, and but before we do anything like that, we have thank yous to send out over the course of the weekend. Yes, indeed. Let me see here. There it is. Thanks very kindly to our subscribers. Thank you very kindly to Pam in Washington State. Thank you very much indeed to James, and thank you very much to Josh. Thank you very kindly to Samson. Thank you. Thank yous continue to go out to our pal Asa. Not Brother Deacon Asa. We have two Asas. This is thank you, Asa. Thank you to Kay. Thank you to John. And thank you to James over in Spain. Thanks as well go out for this morning to Peter. Thank you, Peter. Thank you to Michael in Madison. Thank you to Melton. And thank you to Patrick in Germany. So those are our subscribers up through this morning. We're running out of the end of November. And like I said, we finished off a little bit short, but I want to send out special thanks to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now in California. Thank you very kindly as well. To our buddy Mark, and thank you very much indeed to, and this is a new one. Just a second. Doggone it. Where'd it go? This will just take a second. And then we'll get into the meat of things. Special thanks to Matty. Yes, you do have listeners in Finland. Thank you, Matty. Thank you very, very kindly. And so to wrap up the month of November now, courtesy of Chris in Germany, we have a $150 challenge on the table, and that will wipe out. That'll wipe out November. That will qualify us for the Ralph's Trash Fitz Walker Stand Challenge, qualify us for the Go Bucks Challenge, courtesy of Steve in New York, who I trust. I don't know. Have you gone home? Are you back in New York yet, Steve? And wipe out the month of November. Okay? And then at least tomorrow, and if we do that this evening, then tomorrow and Wednesday we will be fundraising free radio, and then Thursday and Friday on the road, and get back at it for the month of December. A week from this evening. And by the way, that Go Bucks challenge, courtesy of Steve in New York. Wow. You know, all morning long it was, well, Bill, this may be Michigan's year. Jim Harbaugh has his Wolverines running like a well-oiled machine. Well, the well-oiled machine sauntered into the Big Horseshoe in Columbus and got a great big old scarlet and gray wrench thrown in it. I mean, what a beatdown. Of course, there was a bit of a beating on Friday evening as well, as my heart was broken once again by my beloved Mountaineers, but, you know, I'm used to it. I lived through the entirety of the Don Nealon era, so I've seen some epic chokes and some heartbreaking losses. Losing to Oklahoma, again, was no great surprise. And, you know, for the younger set, I say, listen, you know, WVU football was God made WVU football to teach the hillbillies not to dream. That's all. But that's the end of the shallowness. We've got a $150 challenge on the table, courtesy of Chris in Germany, who will be there at the big Malloy book signing. And I should tell you that the last couple of hours I spent, the last 36 hours have been spent with four great big old pork butts in brine. And about 4 o'clock I started the fire. About 5:30, I put the butts on the fire, and so they should be done about sunrise tomorrow. And the hickory, the cherry, the pecan, and the applewood smoke are just pouring to them right now. They got all their seasonings in the brine, and then we'll get started on the rest of it as soon as that part is done. God, I love barbecuing. I love smoking. I mean, it's about 35 degrees outside. We'll get down to about 26 overnight. But that smoker won't know the difference. No, it'll be a nice, comfortable, 225, 230 degrees in there. And wonderful things will be happening. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed. Well, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. I will take that as a compliment. You're just obscene, Bob. You should have seen those butts going on the smoker. See what I did there? Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, thanks to our buddy Foam Cups, a brand new Patreon subscriber. Thank you very kindly. That is much, much, much appreciated. Remember, if you want to participate via Patreon, your contribution doesn't come out until the first day of the month anyway, so that's awesome. Thank you, Foam Cups. Now, where to begin? Well, it is, Moran Monday, right? Yeah, it is? Yeah, it is.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Yes, there it is, the halcyon sound of the Calliope, calling us one and all to this thin cybernetic veil of canvas mere steps off the carnival midway. I'm talking about the Moran Monday tent here at the Horn. Yes, 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 just steps away from where you until recently were standing, futilely throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in a vain effort to win a tiny little iguana who will be the curse of your existence after it gets to be about the same size as a small car after you've taken it home. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Come on in, the thin cybernetic veil. Step behind it, and it's all waiting for you here. We've got them all. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, baggers, booger eaters, libertarians, maggots, trumpanzees, Republicans, all waiting for you here, right behind the Moran Monday door. Yes, 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 you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Nonetheless, for a $10 a month subscriber, it works out to be in about 16 cents an hour, keeping the Moran Monday tent open. And everything else that happens Monday through Friday, about 16 cents an hour, about a 20th or maybe a 30th of a not terribly large size cup of corporate coffee, or maybe for the whole program, a whole 3-hour program, every bit of not quite a half of a McDonald's hamburger. And here's the thing, the Horn won't do you any bodily damage. I can't say the same about the McDonald's hamburger. But nonetheless, jump right in, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, moms and dads, kiddies and cousins, come on in. A gentle reminder, keep a close hand on wallets, purses, handbags, backpacks, small pet animals, including any iguanas you may have won, small children, and yes, even European-style messenger bags, because after all, the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed, you will. And Morans, to paraphrase Samuel Taylor Coleridge, Morans everywhere, and not anyone to think. Nope. And we have lots of opportunities to, as far as the Morans go. I mean, later on in the program, when I open the phone lines, you might want to opine on what it means to live in a country that gasses babies. Because, well, we only thought that the Trump regime had found the bottom of its evil being. When we started putting babies in cages, but no, now we're gassing them. So we can talk about that. Yeah, we can talk about that. We can talk about the melanoma's nostalgia Christmas at the White House, in which she recalls her girlhood back in Vlad the Impaler's Blood Forest. Yeah, we can talk about that. Mm-hmm. We can talk lots about Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, yes, down there in Mississippi. That's how she says it, by the way. I was watching the Trump rally, there from Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan, in which, by the way, you know, birthplace of Elvis, no kidding, Julius Geezer compared himself to Elvis, and the maggots, they just clapped. Not very well, because, you know, they're not real coordinated. But they, when he compared him, you know, when I was young, everyone said, except for, like, the blonde hair, that I looked like Elvis. Yeah, he did. He did. Mm-hmm. Accused Mike Espy of being a socialist. Mike Espy is probably to the right of Bill Clinton. Just saying. But, you know, anybody who opposes Julius Geezer is probably, you know, V.I. Lenin in drag. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's not where I want to start this evening. No. I want to start in Talibandiana, of all places. Yes. I want to start in Talibandiana. Well, okay, before we start in Talibandiana, let's go down to that cradle of Southern gentility and the Southern way of life down there in Jackson, Mizzoupistan. Yes. According to WLBT, and I'm speculating here, Cindy Hyde Smith fans got a little overzealous, yes, because this morning, about 7:15 a.m. Central Standard Time, some folks discovered things on the grounds of the state capital of Mizzoupistan. It decided to leave some calling cards. And lots of folks in Mizzoupistan know exactly what this calling card means. A couple of nooses were found strung over tree limbs on the ancient grounds of the Mizzoupi state capital. Yes, nooses. Mm-hmm. Calling cards, indeed. About 7:15 a.m. when the state capitol police took the nooses and the signs down. They will not release what the signs themselves said. They claim, the police does, the police do, that they are reviewing surveillance tape to figure out just exactly who it was that left those nooses. Now, let's see here. Governor Phil Bryant, who himself, once upon a time when he was a young man, attended a segregation academy. You remember, the segregation academies were founded in all over Mississippi by the White Citizens Council. When the Supreme Court of the United States finally, and this was back when we had a Supreme Court with at least a modicum of morality about it, no more. Brown versus Board of Education was decided in 1954, and Mississippi just really, really didn't want to comply with Brown versus Board of Education. And so they hemmed and hawed and they dithered and they dithered until in 1969, the Supreme Court of the United States finally said, nah, enough already. Integrate. And the folks in Mississippi state government said, well, all right, if you insist upon us mixing of the races and promoting the miscegenation and not making Mississippi great no more, well, I guess we're going to do it. So the public schools were integrated in Mississippi, at which time these segregation academies began popping up like poisonous mushrooms after a spring rain all over Mizzoupistan. And the current governor of Mizzoupi, he attended a segregation academy, and they were horrible schools. I mean, you had teachers in there who barely had high school degrees in their own right. But the governor of Mizzoupistan, he attended a segregation academy. And interestingly, so too did Cindy Hyde Smith. She attended. And you know what? They're kids. You're a kid. You don't have a chance. You know, hey, Mom, Dad, I'd just soon go to the public school. No, that didn't happen in Mississippi in 1969, 1970, 71, 72, 73, 74, 75. It didn't happen. You went where Mama and Daddy told you to go. And Mama Hyde and Daddy Hyde and Mama Bryant and Daddy Bryant told their youngins that they was going to go to a segregation academy. And so they did. Here's where it gets tough, though. Cindy Hyde Smith knew the history by the time she was a grown-up. Things she did as a grown-up, like, posing next to the Confederate flag, posing in a Confederate hat, holding a musket, describing secession as Mississippi history at its best, yield. Well, by the time the years had rolled on by and she had youngins of her own, lo and behold, how about it? That's right, Cindy Hyde Smith sent her own precious darling lumpkin daughter to another segregation academy. Now, by then, they'd transformed themselves from merely segregation academies to Christian academies. But they still were Christian academies that had almost no Hispanics, no black people, no African Americans, and, well, you know, a couple of Asians. Academies. Yeah, she knew damn good and well what was going on. And so this morning, in the state where the last lynching was not 30 years ago or 10 years ago, but was, you know, last year, well, a pair of nooses were found on the Capitol grounds, and Governor Phil Bryant, proud alumnus of a segregation academy, said, "The perpetrators of this act will be identified and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. I have contacted the Department of Public Safety and the Federal Bureau of Investigation for assistance." You know, that Federal Bureau of Investigation that is now run by a hardcore right-winger who is squatting in the office of the Attorney General of the United States. U.S. Attorney Mike Hust. Well, he responded to the nooses and the hate signs with a statement of his own. "With our law enforcement partners, we are actively looking into these acts of hate and intimidation. Let me be perfectly clear. There is absolutely no place in our state for these unacceptable symbols or tactics to intimidate others. If we find evidence," that's a big if, "beyond a reasonable doubt, and of course, that a federal crime has occurred, these criminals be swiftly prosecuted and held accountable." Time out. Hold on. Time out, okay, Jack? Yep. Notice that if we find evidence beyond a reasonable doubt that a federal crime has occurred, that ain't the standard. A federal crime can only be charged by an indictment unless the defendant agrees to be charged by information. In order to get an indictment, you have to go to the grand jury. But a grand jury indictment does not require proof beyond a reasonable doubt. No, damn it, no, it doesn't. In front of a grand jury, the only thing U.S. Attorney Mike Hust would have to prove is that it was more likely than not that a crime was committed, and more likely than not that the person being charged committed the crime. That's like 50% plus 0.0000001. And think of beyond a reasonable doubt as like 99.9. So what Mike Hust has said in his statement is, ain't no way, even if we catch him, we're going to prosecute a federal hate crime for a couple of nooses and some hate signs being left around state capitol. Hell, that's in Mississippi, that's just any old day ends in Y now. But he did continue, "Let us all respond to these despicable acts by voting, working, raising our families, practicing our faith, and pursuing the American dream. Here in our great state, without fear or trepidation, and in harmony with our fellow citizens." You know, our fellow white citizens. And then there was good old Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves. And he said, "I've asked Capitol Police and the Department of Public Safety to fully investigate this here reprehensible act, and will support the resources necessary to find those responsible." You'll notice he doesn't even bother. He says, "Yeah, I will find them." He doesn't say anything about prosecuting or imprisoning or punishing or making an example of. Or, no, we just don't find them. Yeah, hell, if nobody's looking, we might just give them a medal. Shit, it's Mississippi. So, yeah, that Morans, Mississippi. Funny, they both start with M, don't they? Coincidence? I think not. But that wasn't even where I wanted to begin this here Moran Monday. Well, gee, thanks, Steve. Steve from Georgistan, subject line, talent. You went from the Geico pothole girl to Foghorn Leghorn. Don't try that at home. You can get your tongue wrapped plumb around your tonsils. Don't do that. And I should add, sitting here in the studio, I'm about, if the wall wasn't in the way, and I'm grateful that it is because it's cold outside, I'm probably about less than 20 feet away from the smoker, the acorn. And hickory, apple, pecan, and grape smoke creeping under the door of the studio beats the living bejesus out of coal smoke. It just, saying. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. Note coming in from Lee in New York.
Stop telling us what's required for the grand jury to indict, Bob.
That ham sandwich knew that the police had evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. Yeah. I know. But like I said, that wasn't where I wanted to start this evening. But I guess it's where we start, huh? No. I wanted to start in Talibandiana. Because this is multi-level moranity. What I mean by that, and we have to go up to northwest Indiana, and I guess Valparaiso, the Valparaiso area. We're post-Thanksgiving now, so every Walmart will have a red kettle in front of it and somebody ringing a bell wearing a Santa hat. And it's fundraising season for the Salvation Army. Well, the Walmart there in northwest Indiana in the Valparaiso area is no different. And so it was this past weekend that some rather tough-looking characters were ringing the bell. One of them had a Santa hat on. Another one just had a red watch cap. Boggin, whatever we're calling them these days. My dad taught me to call it a watch cap. And there was a woman with some sort of headgear on. But it wasn't the headgear that got folks. It was the labels, the patches on the jackets. Like the one patch that simply read WAR, W-A-R. Now, we generally, we hear war and we say, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. But if you are a certain kind of Trumpansie, a certain kind of maggot, a certain kind of white folks, you know that WAR stands for White Aryan Resistance. And in case anybody was wondering, there was another patch that simply read Aryan. Turns out the Walmart Salvation Army bell ringers were members of a local, well, it was the Hells Angels Northwest Indiana Region Motorcycle Club. Now, because we have dear friends in Talibandiana, I know that there are plenty of decent, upstanding human beings, you know, progressives, liberals, Democrats, in Talibandiana. And some of them were shocked and disgusted enough to point out the fact that the Salvation Army was letting white supremacist Hell's Angels do their bell ringing for them in front of that particular Walmart. Like I said, this is a multi-level Morian story. And so the Salvation Army acted ever so swiftly. And they booted the white supremacist bell ringers. Now, this is the same Salvation Army that would, whose major or general or field marshal or whatever the rank structure is there in the Salvation Army, that person would have purple polka-dotted kittens with crocheted tails if, say, a couple of women, let's say a couple of women who were married to each other and loved each other with all their hearts, were standing there appropriately dressed and not wearing any white supremacist gear, ringing the bell, just being a couple of lesbians in love, ringing the bell for the Salvation Army. No, that ain't going to happen in the Salvation Army. And neither, and they'd also they would also faint dead away. The Salvation Army would, if a couple of gay guys were ringing the bell. Never mind the white supremacist iconography. It's just the gay part that would drive the Salvation Army right up a fucking tree. But somehow or another, nobody noticed on the form where the volunteering takes place, the words Hell's Angels Northwest Indiana Region Motorcycle Club. Hell's Angels was not a tip-off to the Salvation Army. It wasn't a clue. It wasn't a red flag. It wasn't it didn't set off any bells or sirens or klaxons. No. Only after people noticed that there were white supremacist Hell's Angels bell ringing did the Lieutenant Christopher Nikolai of Porter County Salvation Army issue a statement that read as follows. Our commitment to non-discrimination includes a dress code for bell ringers, requiring that they wear red Salvation Army aprons and making it clear that no symbol, marking, or lettering that is viewed as discrimination may be worn. Clearly, the bell ringers in question did not comply with this dress code. They will not be allowed to volunteer in the future. We are embarrassed that we were unable to prevent this incident and apologize to all who were offended, as were we. Oh, goddess of irony. I already have a roaring blaze going outside, so maybe long about midnight I'll open up the smoker and scoop out a shovel full of coals and put it in a scuttle, work it up to a roaring blaze, and sacrifice yet another rubber chicken in honor of the goddess of irony. I just read all. Did you see any? Did you hear? I mean, you can't see, it's radio. But did you hear anywhere in there Lieutenant Colonel Lieutenant Christopher Nikolai objecting to the fact that it was white supremacists? No, I'm not going to read it to you again. Because, well, the reason you didn't hear any objection from Lieutenant Christopher Nikolai of the Salvation Army to having white supremacists ringing the bell for the Salvation Army is because there was no objection in his statement. The Hells Angels of Northwest Indiana were bounced for a dress code violation. Lieutenant Christopher Nikolai made that clear. Had they not been displaying a symbol, marking, or lettering viewed as discrimination, and had they been wearing their red Salvation Army aprons, they might still be ringing their damnable bells. They were dismissed for a dress code violation. To be abundantly clear, they were not dismissed because they're filthy, disgusting, goddamn white supremacists. No. Strictly dress code. But the most fashionably attired gay couple would cause monumental conniptions among the Salvation Army faithful. I know, Irish Dave pointing out. Jesus, Bob, it's right there in their name. Angels, damn it, angels. And as funny as that is, there's every possibility in the world that it's true. Whoever was organizing the, okay, you ring for 2 hours, you ring for 2 hours, you ring for 2 hours. They just saw angels. They didn't see the hells part. Guess they never read the Hunter Thompson book, neither. It's got some dirty words in it. You know, a good, self-respecting, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Salvation Army foot soldier would never be caught dead reading something like, well, you know, Dr. Hunter S. Thompson. Oof. Now you see why I wanted to lead with that. I mean, you don't get much more Moran than that. Hell's Angels? Well, were they wearing their red apron? Well, they were? Well, that's fine then. I know. Charming, isn't it? But there are many Morans out there. Yes, many indeed. Where shall we go next? Okay, can we have a an art of word knowing moment? The maggots are coming completely undone. Well, completely. That's a matter of. Oh, wait a second. Let me check here. Silent R. Lamar with a note. Hey, Bob, just restocked the popcorn cabinet. Got the good TV watching chair out. The reason for this is come January when the Dems take over the House and the G20 meeting starts and Trump finishes kissing Putin's butt, will Mr. Schiff or Vladimir Putin get Donald J. Trump on money laundering? Well, don't change that channel. We'll be finding out. Yes, indeed. Lee in New York, Salvation Army. They probably thought that any Hell's Angel would look good in red. Who knew the Salvation Army was fashion forward? So now we get to the part of the program where we talk about what happened on the U.S.-Mexico border between San Diego and Tijuana this weekend. Oh, wait a minute. This from Brother Deacon Asa. Maybe the Salvation Army sent the Nazi bell ringers over to a South American branch so that they can do their bell ringing down there. Vatican reference. Well played, Brother Deacon Asa. Well played. Now, some desperate people, because we are deliberately slow-walking the asylum-seeking process down at the border. Some desperate people, mostly moms and babies, literally barefoot babies in diapers, made a break for the border to try to get a foot inside so that they could then claim asylum. The United States responded to this with Border Patrol gassing those moms and those babies. I've seen instances on social media where good God fearing upstanding Bible believing Christ centered evangelical fundamentalist amosexual maggots responded by saying, "Well, hell, I was in the military once. I had to get tear gassed. Just said no, I was black. It ain't no big deal." What the hell? Bunch of liberal pansy sissies. But the fact of the matter is, the Border Patrol of the United States fired tear gas at mamas and babies. And just in case you were wondering, friends and neighbors, they did that in your name and in my name and in the name of every American citizen. An order went down to actual, no kidding, members of the United States Border Patrol and said, "Well, it's time to gas the babies in the diapers and their mommies." And do you know that there is not one news story out there about a single solitary member of the Border Patrol saying, "I'm sorry, that's just a bridge too far. I can't do it. I quit. Here's my badge. See you later. Yeah, I got a mortgage, and yeah, I got a car payment, and yeah, I got insurance premiums, and yeah, I got to buy groceries, and yeah, I got all of that, but you know what I ain't got? I ain't got to gas no babies." Nope, not one member of the Border Patrol did that. Not one. They didn't snap a salute. But they followed orders. as in, we were only following orders. They followed orders. John wants to know, subject line, Hell's Angels. Are you saying that the angels can't work the grift, too? I'm saying that if the Salvation Army is horrified by the thought that a gay couple might bell ring for them, that having white supremacist, you know, Klan sympathizing, Nazi sympathizers, and them being a Christian organization, allegedly, might not be the best idea. That's all I'm saying. Well, I don't know what kind it was. Irish Dave says, now comes the nitpicking time. Tear gas is of two kinds, CN and CS, and the CS is some really, really nasty shit. I'd imagine the CN's not exactly a walk in the park. But, yeah, in our name, babies were gassed this weekend. And out of it all, the guy who back in the day simply called himself Jerry Rivers, but went on to rechristen himself Geraldo Rivera, he took to Twitter, him and his little blue check mark, and he said, this is an art of word knowing moment, the gassing of hashtag migrant caravan made me nauseous. Those images may play with the base, but they will also be a scar on our nation's reputation. A hungry, frightened family will not stop trying to get to a better life. No, we can't accommodate all, but we can be humane and compassionate. Again, time out. The gassing of migrant caravan made me nauseous. No, Geraldo. The many hateful, right-wing, disgusting things you've said over the decades makes you nauseous. Apparently he means he was nauseated. But the maggots over there watching Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and watching his Twitter feed didn't like it even a little bit. Well, when things get out of hand, what would you do? If you'd do anything at all, you always side with the Latinos because you are a Latino. We cannot take care of all these people and women and children or a small segment of these people. Most are young males. Or as the White House likes to describe them, young military age males. Well, let them in. Let them join the fucking military. Oh, sorry. Here's another maggot. We aren't the world caretaker. Who told them they could come? Who's funding, aiding, feeding? We have plenty here already we cannot take care of. Have to draw the line somewhere. How many are you willing to house? That's one of their favorites. Well, how many are you willing to move into your house? Huh? How many? We don't have plenty here that we can't take care of. One of the things that happens when people south of the border come to this country is they tend to work harder than any white folks born here. And they don't piss and moan about living 11, 12, 15 to a house. They work their asses off. And they're not exactly a giant drain on the welfare system. And besides, we could probably double the welfare budget. And, you know, that would amount to 0.001% of the fucking Pentagon budget. And then, of course, some white lady said, you don't speak of the violence that they do. You're always on that fence, Geraldo. So it's okay for them to throw shit and hurt someone because they don't get what they want. They were told not to come. Is a new life or a handout? Tell me which one. I don't even know what that means. But the fact of the matter is, the Pentagon has been authorized by the Trump administration to use deadly force. And I have no doubt that Julius Geezer would love nothing more than to see a few machine guns get busy at the border. And, of course, it'll come as no surprise to anybody to find out that the maggots are hollering in regard to the gassing of children. False flag, false flag. Fake news. Not even happening. And following their God Emperor's statements, well, if it became necessary, if somebody decided to open up with a machine gun on women and babies, a Border Patrol agent was recently exonerated for having shot dead a Mexican kid because he threw a rock. As Ron and Raleigh pointed out the other day, we're taking lessons from our partners in peace. Meanwhile, Silent R. Lamar, toddler at the border. Oh, now, Bob, that toddler with the diaper could have had hazardous waste in that there diaper. I don't know of any diapers that aren't, but, you know, memories. On and on and on and on. By the way, we got a great group in the chat room this evening, if you're listening live. Come on by. Longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky has, for the first time in a while, folded space to become Man Cave. And he joins midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgistan moderating a group that includes Anatole and Barkway and Foam Cups and Hoghead and Laurel and Otto and Rally and Urban Prospector and VT Blom and the Warrior Witch. I mean, we got a fun group going this evening. Come on by, pick out a screen name and a password, and join in the merriment. Randy says, just wait until we all get our national ID, known as Real ID, and disguised as a state driver's license, and the police can say, your papers, please, said with a German accent. Well, thank you, Robert. Robert via Twitter says, enjoying the program this evening. And what's happening at the border is disgraceful, just disgraceful and disgusting. And you know what? For the Trump regime, typical. And it'll come as no surprise that the person behind most of this evil is none other than Stephen Miller. At some point in time, that little worm needs to be called before some House committee to do some testifying for about 12 or 13 hours. Make him sweat. Make him explain in profound detail every jot and tittle of the white supremacist philosophies to which he adheres. And let the world hear it. Is that mean of me? I just think it would be nice to have some transparency. Oh, by the way, something else broke over the weekend. Hey, you remember the story of the kids and the high school in Baraboo, Wisconsin, who were photographed giving the stiff arm Nazi salute? It caused some degree of consternation here in the in our country among decent people. The maggots didn't mind at all. Well, the Baraboo School District promised an investigation. And they finished part of it. And they issued a statement under the signature of Baraboo School District Administrator Lori Muller. She said, moreover, because of students' First Amendment rights, the district is not in a position to punish the students for their actions. That's right. High school students giving the Nazi stiff arm salute is not subject to any form of disciplinary action because First Amendment. So maybe at the next prom photo, the Baraboo boys can all be photographed holding nooses or wearing pillowcases and bedsheets. And Baraboo School District Administrator Lori Muller can say, moreover, because of students' First Amendment rights, the district is not in a position to punish the students for their actions. Which is kind of interesting. Because it just so happens that I am so old that I can remember when a case involving student speech went all the way to the Supreme Court. Yeah, actually, it's not a matter of being so old. It wasn't that long ago. It was 11 years ago. It had to do with an event from 2002. In which a high school principal named Deborah Morse suspended a student by the name of Joseph Frederick during the 2002 Winter Olympics torch relay. Joseph Frederick displayed a banner that read, in all caps, minus one cap, bong hits for Jesus. Wasn't even on school property. It was across the street from the school. After he was suspended, punished for his speech, his First Amendment speech, Joseph Frederick sued. And he said his First Amendment right to free speech had been violated. Now, this case came out of Alaska. In district court, they bounced his case, but he appealed it, and the Ninth Circuit reversed the dismissal and said that, yes, young Mr. Frederick's free speech rights had been violated. This set the case up to reach the Supreme Court of the United States. In a case that is styled Morse, M-O-R-S-E, v. Frederick. An old balls and strikes John Roberts issued the majority opinion for the court. And he said, why, shucks, no! The school district didn't violate Mr. Frederick's free speech rights. Goodness gracious, so! And he said there was a three-part test to determine whether or not a student's free speech rights had been violated. One, Did the free speech occur at a school event? Two, was the speech reasonably viewed as promoting illegal drug use? And third, yeah, sure, a principal can legally restrict that kind of speech. So to be clear, you can be suspended for saying displaying a banner. And by the way, at that time, it was legal for citizens who were of age to grow their own cannabis in Alaska. But that still didn't make it all right for young Mr. Frederick to offer up the thought, bong hits for Jesus. Even though, if we assume, being 2,033 years old, Jesus was an adult, and if we posit that Jesus was an adult in the state of Alaska who could legally grow his own cannabis and could therefore do all the bong hits he wanted, and it was not illegal conduct, well, nonetheless, you lose, young man. On the other hand, however, in Baraboo, Wisconsin, the First Amendment protects a bunch of boys giving a salute that is a direct reference to a murderous regime that killed 6 million Jews and something on the order of 15 or 16 million people overall back during that little dust-up that we know as the Second World War, which they incidentally started. That's some free speech is what that is. Advocating that Jesus would probably do a bong hit? Oh, gee, God, no, no. Oh, the horror, the horror. David in South Carolina, Stan, was right there with me on it. Yep. They can ban bong hits for Jesus, but not Nazi salutes. Anybody want to posit the argument that this country isn't getting a little bit more fascist every goddamn day? Because I don't think you can win that. Well, I won't say I'm looking forward to it, but I will not be surprised when we find out that the Baraboo seniors have decided to show up and everybody's going to hold a noose this time. Yeah. So, I tell you what, things are a little bit strange this evening. It's about 3 minutes past the hour. Again, Chris from Germany has a $150 challenge on the table to finish off the month and help out a little bit as we get ready for the big road trip. I reserved the car this afternoon. I have to leave our car here because Margie's got a stress test on Friday. Hopefully that challenge will be met. $10 at a time, $20 at a time, doesn't matter. But $150 challenge is on the table. And thanks again to Mark and Felicia and our buddy in Finland for jumping in, as well as all our subscribers. But we're going to have, wait a second, question. Query coming from Ron and Raleigh. How far from school property did the principal have the right to confiscate private property and punish a student? Could she have done this if he was standing in his front yard? old balls and strikes seems to suggest that she could have. Because bong hits, after all. It's not like he was doing something patriotic like giving a Nazi stiff-arm salute. Yeah, if old Balls and Strikes Roberts had a conscience, I bet he'd be feeling pretty silly right about now. Reading, if he read the statement of the school district superintendent there in Baraboo. Well, you know, their speech is protected by the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't suppress Nazi speech just because they're little Nazis. No, sir. But I'm going to run outside and check on the fire and check on the temp. I have to do that about every hour or so. We'll have a couple of minutes of dead air. I'll go as fast as I possibly can and come right back in. Damn, this stuff smells good. If only they could make a perfume like this. So we'll be silent for a second, and then if you want to engage in some conversation, you're more than welcome to. The lines are all open. The stress line, of course, toll free 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN. If you've got your own long distance plan that where you don't have to pay anything like most cell phones do, then just dial 304-640-2829. That's the same line. Or, of course, 304-574-8178, or Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. That's the other line. And jump right in, and we'll see what's on folks' mind. This is Moran Monday on the Horn. Sorry for the dead air. I'll be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid. Ooh-wee! We're past just smelling like hickory now. Now it's beginning to smell like pork and hickory and apple and cherry and pecan. Well, no, Flavio says, put some music on. If I put some music on, Flavio, then the file won't play when the replay goes up at YouTube. Because you can't explain fair use to an algorithm. You just can't. Okay, Jackson, Mississippi. Irwin says he wants to talk about Jackson, Mississippi. Hey, Irwin.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
You know what? If I could bottle this smell, this aroma. Ooh, wow.
Yeah, there's nothing like good barbecue. So there, in this town, there's one place with barbecue, and you have to take a bank loan out to go in there and eat because it's so expensive. But yeah, it's... This is not really the barbecue capital of the world here, so. But
well, neither is West Virginia.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not like going down to the Deep South where there's a barbecue joint on every corner.
Right. Yeah.
Or going, you know, say to the Great Northwest where there's a coffee stand on every corner.
Right. Yeah. That's more what you find here. We have a microbrewery about on every corner here, so.
Okay, see, I could make a case for that too.
Yeah. Right. I spent 3 years down in Mississippi. I was in Idaho, and I was in a strange office situation where there was some infighting going on, and I didn't like what I was doing. And so I went to a training course in Fort Worth and saw what they were doing down south. Jamie Whitten was in Congress then. I don't know if he was a Democrat or Republican. I don't remember. But he brought all kinds of money to Mississippi. So they needed people to work in Mississippi. Nobody wanted to go to Mississippi. So I decided I wanted to try it out. So I was there for a few years. It was really a different thing. Before I left.
Oh, I could imagine there was a little culture shock for you.
Yes, yes, a lot. Yes, I think I probably talked to one black person in my life, you know, from where I was from, you know, maybe a Native American or two, but that was it. So, but I found that the blacks were overall a lot nicer than the whites down there. I really did. I mean, they were more, they seemed more down to earth for the most part. I never had any trouble with anybody that was black there or anything. So, I, you know, you're talking about Tupelo. My guy who was working right under me was from Tupelo, and he was a Southerner. One time Dixie was playing. We're in New Orleans and at Pat O'Brien's, and the piano player started playing Dixie, and he got up and took his hat off and put it over his heart. And I mean, he was really, and he had some really strange thoughts about blacks, you know. I don't want to repeat them because they're so bad, but I just couldn't believe some of the things I ran into there. I was in Greenwood, Mississippi one time. That's the Delta region, big plantation part. That's the people, even, you know, the people I was working with said that those are rednecks. That's the worst part of Mississippi to go to. And so I was there, and I went to a restaurant, and that was in the 80s, and there was somebody out front, and I know he was there to keep the blacks out. I mean, why else would there be somebody standing there, you know? And so it was, yeah, culture shock for me back then. So the summers were unbearable. You sweat, and to mow your lawn was just horrendous. I mean, but
well, you got to remember, I kind of grew up in that heat.
Yeah,
and I love it.
Yeah, well, I got used to it, and quite a lot. You know, just the fact that you sweat all the time, no matter what you do, you know. And then it's always air conditioning from one air conditioning thing to another. And it's just, we came up here, during the summer one time when we were down there for, I think we were there for 2 years, and we were in Rapid City, South Dakota. And it was, you know, it was, I think it was 100 degrees, but you know, the humidity is real low. And we were at this place called Reptile Gardens watching, I don't remember if it was alligators or rattlesnakes or something. And we were in the sun, and everybody else were over in the shade. And we sat there and didn't even bother us a bit, you know. And everybody was there whining about how hot it was and everything. So, but then I changed from Mississippi. I went to North Dakota, which was a big extreme the other way. But back to Mississippi and Jamie Whitten. Do you remember Jamie Whitten? Or?
The name, but not. I can't put any specifics with it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if his politics or anything. But you know, Ross Barnett was a, I think he was a real, real racist. And
Yeah.
And there was the Ross Barnett Dam just north of Jackson there. Big dam. Still didn't help because the Jackson still got flooded occasionally, even with the dam there. But there was so many. And I heard of the, I was working for what was the Soil Conservation Service then, and the three civil rights people that got killed in Philadelphia were put in a dam that the
Soil Neshoba County, Mississippi.
Right. It was a dam that was being built. And
Schwerner, Goodwin, and Cheney.
Yeah, and the guys I was working with, one of them had designed that dam and everything. They thought it was awful too, but they certainly didn't brag about it or anything, but they just mentioned that. But it was an experience for me, so it opened my eyes a lot and changed my thoughts about some things. So it was a good experience. So how's your barbecue going?
It is going fantastically. I checked the temp just a minute ago. It was we're right at about 225 degrees. It'll stay that way till about sunrise.
Oh, okay. So you're cooking it at home and then taking it then?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
It's been brined, so it's been thoroughly preserved. The smoke takes it another step that way. The flavorings and the seasonings get way down deep into the butts. And then they'll be finished and wrapped real tight and near frozen.
Right. Yeah. It sounds so good. It's all pork then, or
the four pork butts going right now, and then two turkeys.
Oh, two turkeys. Okay. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Well, I wish I was there.
if there was more time, there would be. I'd do ribs and brisket too, but that's just pushing it.
Yeah. Do you just have a small smoker then to put?
I've got a char griller brand Acorn.
Oh, okay.
And it's the most wonderful smoking device I've ever owned.
Right. Okay.
Agnes found it for me on the Facebook yard sale page. It was still in the box, and got it for less than half of what the thing sells for retail.
Okay. Well, that's good. I suppose that's pretty expensive to buy it outright.
That depends on how you define it. That Acorn is about $300, and it's similar, it's ceramic cousin. The Big Green Egg or Kamado Joe goes well north of 1,000.
Wow, yeah. Okay.
And this thing does just fine. I don't think it's going to last a long time. Some of the enameling's already falling off the bottom of the ash pan, but I don't think they can help that.
Yeah.
And it'll be easy to just order a replacement ash pan.
Mm. I've smoked fish before. I never was really good at it, but I've smoked fish.
I'm no good at smoking fish at all.
Yeah.
Now I can cook it. I can take a like a whole salmon or something like that and pour the smoke to it. But I think you've got to be able to suspend the fish or put it on some sort of a rack or a screen or something like that, and you've got to cold smoke it.
Okay. So just it's a long process, I suppose, to do that.
I harbor dreams of someday building a smokehouse, but that hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
I thought maybe one could repurpose it and have it be part smokehouse and part sauna.
Right.
and call it a smauna.
Yeah. Do you like smoked salmon or?
Oh God, I love it.
Yeah, yeah. I like it too.
Brother Deacon Asa sent some along a couple of years back, and it was mind-bogglingly good.
Right. Have you ever had halibut or?
I had when I was up in the Northwoods in Wisconsin, I had some smoked lake trout.
Okay.
And that was just fantastic.
Right. Yeah. You can actually buy lake trout here from Flathead, which is right north of here, and it's pretty reasonable. But it's not smoked, but it's just regular lake trout. So, I've been eating a lot of fish lately. You can find it pretty good price on it at times. So I eat quite a lot of it. Well, Bob, I suppose I'll let somebody else get on. I don't know if I made any sense or not, but
no, you did. You did. There's a certain amount of culture shock that attends going down south.
Yeah. The football, I think, was another thing being so big there. It's really people really take it seriously.
Oh gosh, yes. It's the second religion right behind alleged Christianity.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, in Alabama, let's see. Just in the so they had the Egg Bowl, which is Mississippi State on Thursday night,
right.
And then Saturday was the Iron Bowl, Alabama and Auburn, and Alabama did what Alabama was expected to do, and that was thump the living bejesus out of Auburn. Which made half the state very happy and half the state very sad.
Yeah, that's a big rivalry there, isn't it?
The rivalry. The hardcore Alabama and Auburn fans don't even know anybody else plays football.
Right. Now, Georgia, do they have a rival like that?
Well, Georgia and Georgia Tech, Georgia and Florida.
Okay.
Georgia and Florida used to be referred to, I think, before it became not okay to talk about things like that. Georgia and Florida used to be referred to as the world's largest cocktail party.
Yeah.
And then Auburn and Georgia have been playing football against each other longer than a heck of a lot of other schools.
Right.
But then again, you get something like the big game between Ohio State and Michigan, and those people lose their minds with every bit as much zeal and vigor and aplomb as, as any Southerner does.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I imagine they probably had to cart Jim Harbaugh away Saturday evening in a padded trailer or something. That guy was probably losing his mind.
Yeah. Yeah, Tennessee they have a big, huge stadium there. I know I worked with a guy from Tennessee.
Oh, Neyland Stadium, it might still be the largest in the United States. I mean, every time, among a few stadiums, there's an effort to keep one-upping and wedging in 15 more seats or something like that. I remember way back when Peyton Manning decided to stay for his senior season at Tennessee, and people were, well, why would he do that? He can make so much money. But the fact of the matter is, whatever he did in pro ball, he was never going to play in a home game with 110,000 people screaming his name again. That was never going to happen. And that's not something that's easy to walk away from.
That's right, we were... Way back when we were in Mississippi, my little school up here, Montana State, they sometimes these little schools go play the big people, and they played Florida at Gainesville, and we drove down for it, and that was way back when, and Emmett Smith was a running back then.
Oh God.
Did they add a third
digit to the scoreboard for Florida that day?
I think it was six. I don't think our Montana State didn't score a score a point. They did stop Emmett Smith for the first quarter, and then after that, it was all over. So,
well, hell, there weren't just a whole lot of people that could claim to have stopped Emmett Smith at all.
That's right. He was one good running back. So, but we were walking away from after the game, and the president of our school was there, and he was saying that he wasn't even invited over to talk to the president of Florida or anything. You know, he felt pretty jilted about it.
Okay, you want outrageous? I got outrageous. Apparently, the field at Bryant-Denny Stadium this past Saturday in Tuscaloosa. And after they expanded that stadium, they had to take up the space where my crummy little apartment sat when I was a student down there. So it no longer exists. But
wow.
The field was wet and sloppy. And so at no cost to the athletic or university budget, some generous soul flew a helicopter down and hovered it, you know, 10, 20 feet over the playing surface and blew dry the field. I'm not kidding.
Really? Wow. Oh.
That's dedication.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But, you know, there are no pro teams in Mississippi or Alabama. And that's so, true. You know, that's what you got.
Right. Well, your team is really good, or
well, I mean, I went to WVU and I went to Alabama, so after WVU breaks my heart, I at least have Alabama to fall back on.
Yeah, that's a sure bet.
And WVU broke my damn heart again. But that's their job. West Virginia University is the winningest major college football program in the country that does not have a national championship.
Okay.
We've been playing football since 1891. And no national championships. We've won national championships in basketball, but not in football. So hence my statement that God made WVU football to teach the hillbillies not to dream.
What do you think it is? The coaches or recruiting or?
Well, I mean it's a small state, so we don't have the talent base and it's not just that it's a small state, we don't have a big population either. I mean, Louisiana's not a big state, but they turn out blue chip after blue chip after blue chip. But we're a small state with a small population, and yet we send we send people around the country to who then go on to do tremendous things, like, for instance, you know, Nick Saban down at Alabama. He's a West Virginia boy.
Okay. Yeah.
And he remembers his West Virginia roots. He even recorded an ad for Joe Manchin during the recent Senate election.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Yeah, he could probably run for governor down there.
Yeah, he wouldn't. Why would he take the demotion?
Yeah, true. Yeah. I actually know somebody here from Alabama, and I told her that they should start a new league for Alabama, and I don't know who else, but semi-pro league or something, you know. And she said, as long as Nick Saban's there, we're going to keep on winning. So that's what they think anyway.
You know, there were some lean years after Bear Bryant, and then Gene Stallings came along, and things were nice again. And then, but Saban is undeniably, forgive me, Bear, but you know, the greatest football coach Alabama's ever had, and arguably the best college football coach of all time.
Just yeah, nice. Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Of course, when you got people that'll fly the helicopter over to dry off your field, I mean, damn.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you get a recruit from Hawaii, of all places, but.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's what happens when you get a team or a program like that, you can get anybody you want to come.
But I tell you what, that young man from Oklahoma sure made a statement Friday night. Holy cow. He is as fast as any human being I've ever seen in my life. Kyler Murray, my God. But we're boring people to tears by being gauche and talking about football, Irwin. So.
Yeah, I better let you go. So.
Thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it.
All right.
And you see, I can always be sucked into a football conversation. It's almost unfair. It's almost unfair. It's like, I don't know. It's like music from the Pied Piper.
Right.
Irwin, you have yourself a good evening, man.
You too, Bob.
All right, later. Bye. That's our buddy Irwin calling from Montana. It is about, we're at the halfway point of the program, and I'm happy to announce that courtesy of Henry and Ellen, we are well past the halfway mark of Chris's challenge. We're past the halfway mark. We've got $65 to go to meet Chris's challenge. Qualify for the Trash Fitz Walker Stand Challenge, qualify for the Go Bucks Challenge, and finish the month of November and have at least 2 days of fundraising free radio. So hooray for that. Thank you, Henry, and thank you, Ellen. Thank you so very, very much indeed. Speaking of Alabama, and not in a good way, by the way, it's more in Monday. You got a nominee? Both lines are open. The stress line is open, 844-843-4676 or 304-640-2829. Or the other line, 304-574-8178, or Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet that you can get past the firewall or whatever. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. You heard Irwin's call. You know how easy it is. A horror transpired Thanksgiving evening at the biggest mall in Alabama, the River Chase Galleria. I've been there years and years and years ago. It's huge. It's no Mall of America, but it's awfully damn big. And some young people apparently got into some sort of godforsaken Thanksgiving evening argument. And one individual pulled out a Freedom Protector and shot another individual and also managed to shoot a 12-year-old little girl, innocent bystander, along the way as well. In the midst of this maelstrom, there stood up a good guy with a gun. A young man who had been trained to handle firearms by the United States Army. And if anybody can teach the handling of firearms, that would be the Army and the Marines and the military. Well, 21-year-old Emantic Fitzgerald Bradford Jr. tried to de-escalate the situation, and when the gunplay started, he pulled out his own legal-to-carry pistol. At that point in time, a member of the Hoover, Alabama Police Department, who remains at this point unnamed, who is not incarcerated, who is not who has not given up on making bail because he doesn't have to make bail. He's just on administrative leave, which means he's getting paid to sit home and watch TV here's what he did. When he saw young 21-year-old Emantic Fitzgerald Bradford Jr. holding a handgun, he didn't think twice. He drew a bead on 21-year-old Emantic Fitzgerald Bradford Jr., the good guy with a gun, and blew him the hell away. Wasted him. And he was left to lay and bleed out on the floor of the mall. Photographs circulated on social media. And then
the Hoover Police Department proudly declared that they, by God, had gotten their man. They'd gotten the shooter who had wounded an 18-year-old and a 12-year-old innocent bystander. I don't know how the 18-year-old wasn't an innocent bystander. He's a gunshot victim. By the time the sun rose Friday morning, the Hoover Police Department was backtracking for all it was worth. Because it turned out that the guy who shot the 18-year-old and the 12-year-old innocent bystander had fled the scene and gotten away and was on the loose and at large. And the man that they had wasted, 21-year-old Emantic Fitzgerald Bradford Jr., Army veteran, trained firearms expert, well, he was not the bad guy. He was a good guy with a gun, like the NRA, the National Rubel Association, is forever shrieking that we need more of. So now the Alabama Law Enforcement Agency, ALEA, has taken over the investigation. People in the Birmingham area are outraged at the way the matter has been handled. And I guess it goes without saying that the young man that the Hoover police blew away was a young African-American man. Nonetheless, I'm sure that Julius Geezer remains outraged if anyone dares to kneel in protest of the slaughter of innocent young black men by police departments around the country. But there he was, another young black man, a good guy with a gun, because there's been two in 2 weeks' time, Chicago and now Hoover, Alabama, blown away by police, eager to shoot somebody. The Hoover Police Department is still trying to cast itself in as good a light as humanly possible, and it ain't much. They said, we can say with certainty Mr. Bradford brandished a gun during the seconds following the gunshots, which instantly heightened the sense of threat to approaching police officers responding to the chaotic scene. We extend sympathy to the family of Emantic J. Bradford of Hueytown, who was shot and killed during Hoover police efforts to secure the scene in the seconds, mind you, following the original altercation and shooting. The loss of human life is a tragedy under any circumstances. During the seconds. Seconds. It took the Hoover police officer seconds to decide that a guy who was holding a gun, but not pointing it at anybody, by virtue of being black, must surely be the guy who needed killing. Young Mr. Bradford, by the way, was the son of a man who worked for the Jefferson County Jail. Yeah. Young Mr. Bradford's family wants to see the body cam footage. So far, no luck. But what's surprising, no, it's not surprising at all. What's not surprising is that come this morning, lo and behold, there was Wayne the Peter, vice president of the National Rubel Association, tweeting out, the NRA tweeted out a picture of him. Well,
Let's see if... Here we go. That's just a stupid GIF. The NRA in the corner, the logo, blinks white, 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 white. With a quote from Wayne the Peter, saying, "To preserve our values and protect our freedom, America needs the good guys to step up like never before. Unless you're black, and then the cops will kill you." Because that's pretty much how it works. That's it. No thoughts and prayers. No official statement from the NRA on the good guy with the gun who got blown away by police. Not a peep from Dana Lush. Greg Stinkfield has kept his mouth closed. No, mostly the NRA has been tweeting about the migrant caravan and how dangerous all those mommies with all those babies and all those diapers are. Yeah. The only one who broke ranks was Colin Noir, who tweeted the following. "Actually, I wanted to talk about guns and the Second Amendment. Don't get it confused. This is a police shooting. Unless you're going to tell me the cop knew for certain that he was supposed to legally have that gun when he shot him, try again, bruh. Details matter." By Sunday, Colin Noir was saying things like, Bradford was mistakenly shot for having a gun, it seems. Then when folks began to point out that the NRA might not want him talking about Emmanuel Bradford Jr., Colin Noir, whose name translates, I think, as Black Bowel, said, "He was mistakenly shot for having a gun. There's no direct info as to what motivated the cop shoot him. Beyond that, I can speculate, but what does that do except give fuel for more confirmation bias, period, not question mark. Why I'm the go-to for these shootings is beyond me, but it is, WHT, it is..." Have I mentioned that Black Bowel is a black guy? And he can't understand why people, you know, being how he's the black guy at the NRA, he can't understand why people reach out and say, "Hey, why aren't you talking about the good guy with the gun that the cops blew away?" "We don't know what motivated the cop shoot him."